Good evening, this is Mae Brussel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It's program 773 and the last Monday of September, September the 29th, 1986. Starting next week on Kazoo, the station that this program emanates from, I'll be doing a one-hour talk show from 9 to 10. World Watchers will be on from 8 to 9. And then I'll take the talk show for 1 hour. I used to have a half-hour talk show before, but I was unable to keep it up because I went back and forth to Los Angeles so much and wasn't sure when I would have to be in town, and I didn't want to disrupt that schedule. But now I can set my own time schedules, and I will be doing that for 1 hour, and we'll be able to cover a lot of the local material of books and movies and plays in the area or political meetings and things that have a political nature that I can share with the local listening audience. Kazoo is a listener-sponsored station, and we have a pledge session twice a year, which is necessary, of course, to keep it going. And this past week, we just completed that section of the fundraising for this part of the year, and people were very generous, and each programmer had their own particular subjects and material or gifts for people who joined the station. I thought I'd share something with you. Tom Davis from Tom Davis Books donated In Banks We Trust, the Penny LaNue book, for people who wanted to become new members to Kazoo. And then I also had the idea that I really need slaves, not somebody to just sit around and talk, but to help me with the hard work for my research, cleaning out files and copying articles. So I said that anybody who gave $100 to the station could be my slave for one day. And the station got two pledges of $100, and I have two slaves, so that will help me with about 8 hours of research, clinging out files and so forth, for one slave and 8 hours for the other, and I thought that was pretty neat. We charge them $100, and they could be my slaves, so I'm looking forward to that. I wish I had a slave about 3 days a week, but I just settle for what I have. Now, the last few weeks, I just briefly touched on the story of terrorism that was taking place and what I considered agent provocateur events that I want to detail for you as time allows during the weeks that follow. I mentioned the chronology 2 weeks ago of the Cameroon explosion that I believe was a test of a neutron bomb. This took place August 21st. 10 days later, August 31st, Nicholas Daniloff was arrested. He's out. I never saw so much coverage over a non-event in my life, just piles of articles on that subject. And just briefly, I'll just mention a few of those later. September the 6th was the hijacking in Pakistan. September the 7th in Istanbul, the shooting in the synagogue and killing 22 worshipers in Turkey. And then September the 7th, right after the synagogue shooting, Ronald Reagan left his home in Santa Barbara, called the Eagle's Nest, and began campaigning for the new Senate nominee, Ed Chow, in California, running against Mr. Cranston, Senator Cranston. And then the next evening, Ed Chow had a dinner in his honor that was hosted by former Defense Secretary under Nixon, David Packard, up in Palo Alto. Now, in that interim, from September the 7th to September the 8th, actually the Pakistan hijacking was the 6th, there were bombings in Paris, and those are what I want to talk about this evening, what is happening in Paris. And September the 4th, there was a bombing at the Gare de Lyon. And September the 8th, at the post office. September the 12th, a casino, cafe, shopping mall. September 14th, Pub Renault, where one was killed and one wounded. And September 15th, the police headquarters, where one was killed and 51 were wounded. So in that interim, in the 2 weeks, there was a time period that I was talking about when all of this violence and confrontation was coming down. And, of course, the terrorists were called the Marxists and the communists, and everything had an anti-Soviet slant to it. Last week, I just briefly went into the subject of the terrorism in France and the connections of the person who is responsible for all of this activity taking place now, Mr. George Abdullah and his brothers. They have close links to George Habash of the Popular Front for Liberation of Palestine, which is very close to our Central Intelligence Agency and to the powers that be in Washington, and much, much higher than that. And this evening, I want to spend an hour on the French terrorism in Paris, because it makes a full circle, as David Emery and I say on the air, what goes around comes around, and this makes a full circle from Paris to the Middle East to Chile and back into Washington, D.C., passing through South America and touching right back to the Reagan administration and Licio Gelli and the powers that be of the P2 and the terrorism that is going on now is a continuation of the terrorism that happened after World War II, orchestrated by Otto Skorzeny. It's the same people, the same cast, the same connections, the links to Klaus Barbie, Licio Gelli, Joseph Mengele, Hans Ulrich Rudel, the top Nazis, Martin Bormann, you name it, and even Adolf Hitler, all tie into this ball of wax, and it is a continuation of terrorism to make way and build up the anticipation or desire for a police state. Now, as far as the French terrorism goes, the first bombings took place just at the end of this past year, 1985, December the 7th. On 2 days, there was a bomb at a Paris department store and one at the Galerie Lafayette. On February the 3rd, the Hotel Claridge at the Champs-Élysées. The first one at the Paris department store was 35 wounded. The Galerie Lafayette, the bomb went off and no one was wounded. At the Hotel Claridge, 8 were wounded. February the 4th, the Gilbert June bookstore at the Left Bank. February 5th, the Forum des Halles shopping center, 9 wounded. February the 3rd was the Eiffel Tower, where a bomb was defused. No injuries. March the 17th, outside of Bernoulli, a bomb went off following a high-speed train going by. 10 were wounded. March the 20th, the Point Show shipping gallery, 2 killed, 28 wounded. March the 20th, by the rapid transit system affiliated with that between Aubert and Châtelet, injuries, bomb defused. September the 4th, the Gare de Lyon I mentioned. And the 8th, the post office. And on the 12th, the casino cafeteria. At 14th, the pub Renault. And the last one was September 15th, the police headquarters, 1 killed and 51 wounded. And, of course, that would call a lot of attention to activities going on when it goes off at the police headquarters. Now, before the whole hour is up, I want to make a very important point that is connected to all of this, and that is the fact that George Abdallah, the man who is allegedly the recipient of all this attention because the powers that be want him released from a jail in Paris, he has now hired Jacques Verge, the attorney, to be his representative on a new set of charges that have come up. Jacques Verge is also the attorney not only of George Abdallah, but he's the attorney for Klaus Barbie. And I'll go into how Verge got hired for Klaus Barbie through Francois Jeannot, a Nazi who represents Martin Bormann, Adolf Hitler, and Joseph Goebbels, the late Joseph Goebbels. And I'm not sure that it is the late Hitler never believed that, and I know Martin Bormann's alive. And I want to go into the connections of Jacques Verge. They give him the title, the Marxist lawyer. Well, you can call Lee Harvey Oswald a Marxist. He said it on a record in New Orleans. And the fact that they say they're Marxist doesn't mean anything. Jacques Verge had disappeared for 7 years, and nobody knew where he was, and then he comes back representing the likes of George Abdallah and Klaus Barbie, of all people, and he has a lot to tell, and he intends to tell it in no uncertain terms. The Barbie trial will start soon. I'll do more on that in a few minutes. So these bombings are taking place, the synagogue to shake up the Jews, the one hijacking in Pakistan, and all facets of society are being tapped by these various injuries and hijackings and bombings taking place. Now, I mentioned several weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, on the air, the article, the editorial from the Wall Street Journal, and it is very, very important because of the people connected here, and sometimes I run through these things very quickly, but the title of the article that I cited to you is War in the Shadows, and it, again, as I mentioned before, goes into the terror in Istanbul, in Karachi, this Istanbul being the synagogue in Turkey, Karachi, the Pakistan hijacking, and then the jailing of a U.S. news correspondent, which is thrown in here, that Danloff, of course. And then the Wall Street Journal says the credit for all of this, for killing worshipers or people on airplanes, going into synagogues and so forth, has only one course, the Soviet Union and its various associated nations run training camps where young men and women learn the terrorist arts. Some of the money to finance their work is raised by drug running, conducted by underground network that supplies other terrorist needs, false passports, vehicles, weapons, explosives, safe houses. You'd think he was reading about the CIA with Otto Skorzeny and Frank Turpel and Carlos. The editorial writer of the Wall Street Journal is listing all of the things that the Soviets do and that the Soviets have to be responsible for the hit at Pakistan or in Turkey. And the Soviets are likely to be the ones because Turkey helps support the Afghan freedom fighters and they play a role in NATO. So it has to be the Russians that are doing all of this. And this is a typical kind of editorial writing that blames the Soviet Union for all of the things that have been documented in books for the last 10 years, and particularly current books, on what our Central Intelligence Agency is doing. Now, I don't want to go into Seymour Hersh's book on the Korean Airlines at this time. That book, The Target is Destroyed. But I do want to mention that I've seen Seymour Hersh on the Phil Donahue show, and I've heard him on various radio programs that I've taped on the air and with Larry King and so forth. And one of the things that Seymour Hersh says is that the Korean airline almost set off a confrontation, that an incident like this could lead to war. And he's whitewashing, you know, that it wasn't a spy plane. Of course it wasn't, but the Russians didn't know it was a passenger plane. And I'll do a lot on this book later. But the point is that our country wants it to be a war. We want to get close to a war. We want stepping stones to that war, and we have to build up that enemy. And we got close because they wanted it close. That's why so much of the evidence is locked up or tied up. But the idea in Mr. Hersh's head, and he's a smart man, he knows better. The idea, he's saying, is it's scary how two superpowers can be wrong about information and get on the brink of war. What's scary is how superpowers can lie through their teeth and lead us to that war and make us think that it was logical to have the war. Now, in terms of this terrorism and the agent provocateurs and the dangerousness of all this, Reverend Moon's newspaper, The Washington Times, had a full-page ad several days last week. One was September the 12th. And the editorial writer for this paper, owned by Moon, is Mr. Arnaud de Borchgrave, affiliated with the intelligence community and the defense community. And Reverend Moon is a large funder of CAUSA, or the sole organizer of CAUSA, that takes care of the Contras, and he's a member of the World Anti-Communist League with a fascist Nazi network that is embroiled in death squads and murders and assassinations. But this is the full-page ad following all of these violences. Well, Mr. Danilov was locked up and soon needs to walk out. But this is what the ad says, because Ronald Reagan, as I said 2 weeks ago, was going to launch the senatorial campaign on the basis of these violences and get your mind set again of that strong anti-Soviet, anti-third world or people's groups to prepare to get more arms and get ready to literally make this whole world an armed camp. This is the ad in large black letters, 2 or 3 inches high. It's hard to describe it if you don't see it. And I'll make a miniature size and include it in the tape that you have. For the listeners on the air, you can send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll send you a copy of the ad. It says, if you want to help fight terrorism today, join us to defeat congressmen, because we're just on the eve of election, and that's what this was all about. Help us defeat congressmen who have acted to give Libyan, Syrian, and Cuban terrorist assassins a safe haven, training facilities on the American continent mainland by their votes against the Nicaraguan freedom fighters. If you voted against them for wasting millions of dollars in drug dealing and death squads, then you are helping Cuban terrorist assassins in the United States. That's the logic of the first sentence. And it says, help us fight terrorism to defeat congressmen who have endangered the lives of American servicemen, their families, embassy, and personnel by their votes against funds to increase American embassy security around the world. Now, Ronald Reagan said last week that what he did in Lebanon was the most painful part of his whole administration. They had forewarning, and that could have been avoided and was botched completely, and they knew who set it off, and it involved CIA, and it was covered up, and I'll get back to that. I briefly mentioned it once. But Reverend Moon and de Borchgrave were saying, vote against congressmen who endanger American servicemen because they didn't vote to put more money into American embassies, and that was a bill that came to almost $1 billion. He said, help defeat congressmen who have made all of America vulnerable and potential hostage to a single terrorist nation missile strike against one of our cities by their votes against full funding of President Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative budget request. Any congressman who voted against the SDI or the full funding, not just to cut off $1 billion or two, if you vote against the full funding, you are helping an American city get wiped out by a missile strike of terrorism. So if you don't want money to the Contras and you don't want a city hit by a missile, then you better vote for the man who want a full funding as much as the president wants for the SDI, which is very dangerous to throw this into the whole terrorism blanket as if you're going to save us from that missile. When it comes in, those missiles would be made in America in the first place. Then it said, we are the Anti-Terrorism American Coalition Committee, the ATAC. We have had enough of congressmen, and they list three things. Congressman, one, who condemned President Reagan's military response to Libyan terrorists. If you didn't like just taking our military and bombing the two cities. Two, who tried to impeach our president for his liberation of Grenada. And I don't think there were that many people who did that. Three, whose votes in the House of Representatives resulted in strengthening and emboldening the terrorists worldwide. Join us now. Help us elect strong pro-Reagan congressmen who will do what is right and needed to combat and defeat terrorism now. Time is short. America is vulnerable. To obtain the complete list of congressmen we hope to defeat and to learn how you can help financially, call 202-662-8730 or write Anti-Terrorism American Committee, Star Route 2, Box 102, Prince Frederick, Maryland, 20678. Help us. Please send your largest personal contribution, up to $5,000, to the Anti-Terrorism American Committee. That's run by Arnaud de Borchgrave and Reverend Moon. Now, those people who published that about the terrorism, the congressman, don't go into people. Forget the late Otto Skorzeny. There's a Frenchman named Jacques Soustelle, S-O-U-S-T-E-L-L-E. Soustelle worked with David Rockefeller, who was a lieutenant in the OSS at the end of World War II and in the final stages of World War II. Soustelle was active in France with the OAS, the Organisation de l'Armée Secret Army. It's the L'Armée Secrète. And the OAS was part of the group that belonged to Permandex that tried to kill Charles de Gaulle and successfully were part of the team that killed John Kennedy in this country a few years later. In 1961, after de Gaulle took a series of measures against him, Soustelle went to Switzerland and Italy, and he followed de Gaulle and, as I say, was active in trying to assassinate him and only returned to France in 1968. He became a protege of Cardinal Ottoboni of the Vatican in Rome, and he was the founder of the CNR, which is the Council National de la Resistance. And he plotted numerous, as I say, plots and hits against de Gaulle. And as a member of the OAS, he went to Spain and worked with Nazi war criminal Otto Skorzeny, who set up these patterns of violence and terrorism and was allowed with the American intelligence to set up headquarters in Spain and death squads in South America. And so Stell is a part of the group of the P2, the Freemason Lodge, and very close to Licio Gelli and Jose Lopez Rega, who recently returned down to Argentina, one of the organizers of the 3A, the death squads, down in Argentina, and part of WACL and the team that have done violence all over the world. He also, Mr. Soustelle, the reason I just mentioned him, because he links to from the Kennedy assassination to the violence and the planning the murders of Charles de Gaulle, to working with Otto Skorzeny and Licio Gelli, and he's very active in a leading member of CAUSA, which is the International Organization of Reverend Moon, disguised as fighting communism. And that's only one man, and we could go on for weeks and weeks on these particular characters. Meanwhile, an article came out of Paris titled French Fear, Erosion of Liberties, and that is what is going to happen in this country as a result of all these activities. Now, just as quickly as I can, a little background on the persons who are causing all these problems, and then the money team and lawyers behind them because those street people that do the fighting and running are not the bottom line of all this. There are coordinators to this terrorism that connect to Reverend Moon and the Washington Times and DeBorsch Grave and Ronald Reagan in the White House. Last week, I just cited a brief message, a mention of the article printed in the San Francisco Chronicle from the New York Times titled, International Plot Could Be Behind French Terror Wave. The Chronicle had that title. It was taken from the New York Times, the 22nd of September, titled Terrorism in Paris, A Narrow Purpose or a Broader Plot. Each paper writes their own headline and asks the question. Now, George Ibrahim, and I won't use his middle name much now, Mr. George Abdallah, 35, is a professed Marxist. He is a Catholic, a member of the Greek Orthodox Catholic Church, a Christian from Syria, and he is not, there's a little bit of contradiction there with being affiliated with the Roman Catholic Church and being a Marxist, I believe, but the title Marxist is convenient. Like they said, Lee Harvey Oswald was a Marxist while he worked in Navy intelligence. Now, he is in jail, and the setup was that a gentleman, Mr. Gil, G-I-L-L-E-S, Payroll, P-E-Y-R-O-L-E-S, Gil Payroll, was the head of the French Cultural Center in both Tripoli and Lebanon, and he was kidnapped in March, last March, and there was supposed to be a swap between the people who kidnapped him to release George Abdallah, who was serving 4 years in jail on matters of terrorism and so forth in Paris. So Perrault was kidnapped in the Middle East, and the return was that George Abdallah would be traded for them. There were several other people in that would have been arrested in Paris. Pierre Caret, a leader for a printer, was arrested last December. He works for the Fighting Communist cell, and he also prints for Abdallah the terrorism posters that go out. And also released last March from jail was Frederick Oriash, who went to Syria and Damascus. I'll do more on him soon. Oriash's attorney is also Mr. Verge, the same attorney that represents Klaus Barbie and represents George Abdallah, and all of them have close links to the highest echelon of Nazi financing that is taking place today out of Zurich, Switzerland. Now, Perrault was released from the Middle East, and when it was time for Abdallah to be exchanged for him as part of the agreement, all of a sudden, and lo and behold, because of two tipsters, two terrorists, they went to the apartment of Mr. Abdallah, and in the apartment they found two machine gun pistols that were used in 1982 for the assassination of U.S. Lieutenant Colonel Charles Ray, who was in military intelligence, and also for the second secretary of the Israeli embassy, Yaakov Bar Semitov. Now, it's interesting that these terrorism activities that took place when Mr. Abdallah was arrested involved terrorism from 1981 to 1984. We're talking about 2 years ago. And he was locked up because of a more recent terrorism. But just when he's ready to be released on a promise that he's to be exchanged, they go to his apartment on a tip. And in there, they find incriminating evidence of a murder, two murders he did in 1982. Now, in 4 years, a real terrorist wouldn't leave traces behind, would he? Would he leave the gun that killed the American or the Israeli sitting around with all the guns and weapons that these guys have and they travel freely? Or if they go to jail, somebody certainly takes their stuff and cleans it out. If a guy wants to get released from a prison in any country, he doesn't keep the weapons of killing, particularly an American or an Israeli, just sitting around in a bed or closet of an apartment like it's some used piece of junk. When he goes to jail, it seems to me that his buddies and these terrorists have networks, would just unload everything he has. So it's very suspicious that this whole thing of all these bombings in Paris that I cited to you are connected to the fact that just when there was a promise to exchange one prisoner for the other, that they get a tip-off and find weapons that belong to two murders in 1982. That just is too much an agent provocateur activity, because then on the basis of the French breaking their promise, because now they find that this guy's done two murders that they hadn't linked him to or suggested, and how come they never went to his apartment if they had a search warrant now? How come they didn't get one since 1982? I mean, it's just sitting around. These guns are just sitting there waiting for somebody to come. So the provocative action was promising to release him, then getting a call to go to his apartment. And when they go to the apartment, they find weapons that happened 4 years ago, two murders that he's conveniently hasn't had a need for if he's in jail. And why keep an apartment? What kind of apartment does he keep if he's locked up? And what are these weapons sitting around for? You could drop them in the Seine for one moment, or from the top of the Eiffel Tower, or throw them away. There must be some garbage container, some way that he didn't have to be linked to them. So by his being linked to them, the powers that be, America intelligence and the justice, said, wait, you can't release him now. We have to try him for these murders. So the French become promise breakers. The French get all the bombings, and the Americans get the electoral payoff for the Senate election. In simplified terms, they get a lot more. But we get a lot of policemen, a lot of army specialists on terrorists, new departments on terrorism. But the release demands didn't make sense. If you're not going to let him out because you find new evidence, how is it they didn't find him earlier? And besides, waiting in the wing is Mr. Le Pen, P-E-N, not P-A-N. Last week I spelled it P-A-N on the sheet, thinking of the PAN party in Mexico, the Nazi party. But the very far right wing is waiting there to take over. And as I mentioned, the New York Times, it was September the 15th, this past week, says that the attorney for George Abdallah is Jacques Verge, V-E-R-G-E, the same attorney for Klaus Barbie. Now, there was another newspaper magazine article titled Switzerland Exposed as Safe Haven for Terrorists. And this article says that this Zurich, Switzerland, is a meeting place for various terrorists. And 2 weeks after the bombing at Libya by the United States, the April 15th bombing, known participants met at a conference in Zurich, Switzerland, including George Habash, who is a very close link to Chile, to Pinochet through his brother, through the what is called the Syndicate in Atlanta, Georgia, behind the assassination teams of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. George Habash, who works with the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, and a lot of double agents from the United States. He was in Zurich, and he was in direct connection with Frederick Oriash. Now, Oriash is the connecting link to the direct action, or the Action Directe, the French so-called leftists, just as Francesco Pazienza and the Italian intelligence were the people that formed the Italian Red Brigades. Just as I wrote 10 years ago, 12 years ago, the SLA is the CIA. And I detailed in that article how the intelligence community set up these leftist organizations. And Oriash was a person who was working for George Habash at one point, and he was arrested in Israel. They got him on a bombing charge, and he spent a couple of years in Israel. And then on the coaxing of Menachem Begin by the Swiss powers that be, the Swiss government and Mr. Jeannot, a prominent Nazi in Switzerland, Mr. Begin released this Oriash, and then he was under his wing and worked with him. And Oriash has been between what looks like the direct action, the French leftist group, and the Habash group, and Mr. Abdallah and his brothers in the middle. And Oriash deposited $1 million in the Zurich Credit Suisse bank not too long ago, and the money was set up for George Abdallah and his group, the Lebanese Army Revolutionary Faction. There are five accounts there. Now, that French Action Directe run by Oriash was the liaison between all of the people that are doing these violences now. And after he was in jail for a while and got out just in April this year and went directly to Syria and to Damascus, and he was escorted by some prominent people of the Syrian intelligence and so forth. And he's been traveling between Zurich, Switzerland, and Damascus, where this case has been building up. And during the summer, he hired as his lawyer Jacques Verge. Now, they've interviewed Oriash this past week, and there's an article in the San Francisco Chronicle, Paris cops pounce on leftists. He denies bombings. Well, he's out on the streets, and he is not. He served 4 years before for some other bombings in Paris, and he says he's not linked. The direct action is not linked to Mr. Abdallah. He may not be doing the bombings, but he is part of the money in depositing the money and going back and forth to Zurich, Switzerland, with some very important people who are behind the scenes. Now, Mr. Abdallah, he joined the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. That's the Georgia Bosch group. And it's the only Palestinian group led by a Christian. The rest are Muslims, and he happens to be a Christian from the Greek Orthodox Church. And Sirhan Sirhan was brought to this country by the conduit of the Greek Orthodox Church when he left what was Palestine, and the family were brought to the United States. The same conduit of Greek Orthodox Church that brought Marina Oswald to the United States and to the Dallas-Fort Worth area for the role that she played in the assassination of Kennedy. This is the first half hour. I'll take a one-minute break and come back with you and continue on this Middle East story. It's very complicated, and the names are new, but it is very necessary to understand what's going on there.